That was Round Midnight by the great Oscar Peterson, one of our great jazz icons in this world. He died on this day in 2007, and his Round Midnight is one of the best in the world, and he understood that song as few others did. We are going to continue, as we have been for this past, since July, talking about Tyrone West and his death while while being held by the police on the streets of Baltimore. We have had everybody on the show involved in this case. It just came out the other day that no police officers will be indicted. We have been in touch with the state's attorney's office. They have not yet arranged a time to join us on the air. We are continuing to talk to them to join us on the air. And we'll continue this look because now we know that Commissioner Batts is also launching his own independent investigation, which will keep this conversation in front of the community as long as that takes place. He just appointed that commission. So we'll be talking to a number of people during the course of this conversation today. We have with us now George Peoples, who is Tyrone West's uncle. We have with us...
Come on.
Good to have you back with us, George. And Tawanda Jones is back with us, his sister.
Thanks for having me on again.
Always. And Neil Norris, his cousin. Good to have you with us, Neil.
Hey, how's it going, Mark? Nice to make your acquaintance.
Same here. And Tessa Hill, who is
yes,
president of the NAACP, is with us as well. So the report's out. No one's going to be indicted. No one's going to be charged criminally in the death of Tyrone West. Let me just start with you, Tessa. I'm curious. I know you said before you went on the air that you had actually had a conversation for a period of time on the phone with Greg Bernstein.
What
came out of
yesterday.
That conversation?
Yes. I called him and he returned my call. I called him right after I heard the news on the radio, on the news. And I called him to let him know that I was shocked, number one, that out of all those officers, no one was charged with anything. And he told me that that I needed to read the report, and the report would show that the officers probably should not have gotten or did not get charged due to the fact of Mr. West was fighting them and that he was dehydrated. And just like the report says, that he died from other issues and other health concerns. But I just can't believe that someone, a young man driving down the street having a good day, all of a sudden is dead a half an hour later after having a confrontation with 8 or 9 officers. And he was feeling fine before then, and the family knew that he wasn't sick. And for him to be dead, but he died, and you get dehydrated, and something happens to your heart if you kicked for 10 or 15 minutes, especially in 100-degree weather. And just like some of the family members have said, the officers were not hurt or bruised or had any scars. Nothing. So how come if they were in a fight with a man that appeared to be very healthy and strong and muscles, how come no one else has any injury if he did anything or feel uncomfortable? So to declare that he died from heart or dehydration is totally false. That could not have happened. I think that it's totally wrong for no one not to get charged. It's terrible that police can stop someone for what they think they see or what they want to think they see, and then half an hour later a person is dead and gone forever from their life and from their family. It's not fair. Even if he was doing anything, even if you rob a bank, my God, people get handcuffed and taken to jail and then go through the process. And none of this should have happened. I'm just really tired of police stopping people and then they wind up hurt, either on foot or in a car, thinking what they think they saw. And so it's just totally not appropriate. And I intend to work with the family continuously through this process, their lawyer, Dwight Pettit, and whatever strength that I can bring from the NAACP, from the local branch, and I'm going to ask National to help me also. This will not continue to go this way. We're going to make them least feel bad and have a lot of pain.
Yes, amen. They need to feel our pain.
So there are a couple of things I'm very curious about that kind of filtered through this, through the press and I think out of the state attorney's office. About the witnesses who said that Tyrone West was fighting the police, A, and B, that there was a woman in the car who testified. Do we know anything about that? Do any of you know anything?
No, we ain't know anything about that until Greg Bernstein set my family down with a bunch of lies. And like I've been saying from day one, this whole thing has been a cover-up. It's like they're lying so much, it's ridiculous. Like, You wait 156 to 57 days to try to come up with this nonsense. You going all the way to make an animated movie, cartoon movie, to show how this supposed to have to justify 10 officers brutally beating and murdering my brother. It's really sad. You know, it's just ridiculous in the life. Like, and then the saddest part about it was when he invited my family to this meeting, for one, he only said that we could bring 5 family members. And this thing has been turning us up. Here is a family that's been seeking answers, you know, for all these months. And you only limit my family down to 5 guests, and we get in your office that could seat about 20 people. And then on top of that, then when he came, it was so rude. First thing he came, there, he asked us to say our names and identify who we were. And long story short, he basically, just before anybody could even get comfortable or adjusted in their seats, like, I'm just going to tell you guys straight up, I'm not prosecuting these cops. And I'm like, wow. So my aunt, who's like a mother to me, she got really sick. You know, it was heartbreaking. So she got up. She was crying really bad. And she went to go walk out the room and get herself together, as well as my cousin Jamie. And this man looked at the rest of my little bit of family that he allowed to come in that room. And he had the nerve to say, well, are y'all going to leave with him? I could just stop right now. Like, are you serious? Like, and then the sad part, then when I brought up the fact about the 2 road cops that started this whole incident, Nicholas Davis Chapman and Ruiz, that had prior beatings, murders, and all these things, he had the nerve to tell me, well, I understand that, but that's administrative. I don't have nothing to do with that part. I'm just trying to see what the action of the cops. And I'm like, oh, you said, this is what, these are road cops. These are not just your regular, normal cops that don't, you know, that have a good track record and that are reliable. You know what I mean? These are people that beat and murder. This is somebody that beat up somebody. Nicholas Davis Chapman, Andrew has just brutally beat somebody 2 weeks prior to my brother's death, Abdul Salam, and you tell me that he's reliable? And then you got witnesses in that neighborhood, and it makes me so sad and angry that you're saying that people in the community that saw what they saw are incompetent. You know what I'm saying? Like, they gave eyewitness accounts of what they saw. They videotaped. And I asked myself, well, did you see the videotape? Well, I saw what you guys saw. I said, we're not able to see the video. I saw the little images on the news. You're supposed to be a prosecutor. This is supposed to be handled thoroughly. How come you ain't looked at the videotape?
Who had a videotape?
He said that basically, I guess, the lawyers or the police department, when the witnesses, you know, turned in the videotapes of what they had from their cell phone videos and whatnot, he said that he didn't get a chance to look at those videos. He saw what we saw that was placed on the news, which was just like a brief moment of my brother dying. Like, they didn't show everything, like them beating up my brother, thank God, because we couldn't take the seat, and I couldn't take the seat. But when I asked him, I said, okay, forget what, okay, you want to say what the people said or didn't see. What did your eyes show you on that video? When people said my brother was drunk out of my vehicle by his dreadlocks, he had to not say to me, well, I didn't see it. I just watched the video that you saw that was on the news. Why wouldn't you watch a video that's a man being brutally killed?
Well, when we do have a chance to talk to the state attorney, we'll ask him that question. And Neil Norris, before I turn to George, I mean, you've not been with us before. You've raised some issues in this as well. What are your concerns after all this?
I mean, from day one, we kind of knew how this was going to play out. I mean, starting with the detectives who tried to play good cop on the porch on July 19th, asking, did Mr. West have any medical problems that you would know of? Why would you ask us that if you weren't intending to place the crux of your investigation on something?
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
30 days passes, 60 days, 90 days, 120. They still can't come up with anything. If you look through this flimsy 10-page or 11-page autopsy report, and you see all of these things coming back normal, and then you see this, okay, we found something in the heart. I'm friends with cardiologists, and I reached out and talked to a couple of my friends, and they was like, Neil, this is BS. Everyone has an arrhythmia, but it's not going to kill you, sir. No one's heartbeat is regular. The term regular heartbeat is an oxymoron. Your heartbeat is regular if it sustains your life. We all know this. And reading through the report, we kind of called BS again. We were like, don't come out here with some excited delirium foolishness.
Exactly.
Read through the report, Mark. And any of my reporters, any of my listeners out there who have an inkling of common sense and the ability to think for themselves, read the report. It's a dumbed-down, watered-down version of excited delirium.
Exactly.
That's what they're trying to point to without using those terms, mm-hmm. because we threw the term out there first. We took the power of that term away, and to justify that, look at page 11 on the tox report. They're saying my cousin had metabolized cocaine in his urine that we know to not be true. So you got this.
And I can put that on my life that that's not true. I can
super
swear on my life.
Up guy fighting for 15 minutes a la Stagger Lee, a la John Henry, super Negro versus 10 cops for 15 minutes in 100 degree heat. That's the story they're trying to paint. Answer this question for me.
One of the things that they're asking, correct. If you have 8 or 9 officers or 2 there first and they call up with code 13 and 6, 7, 8 officers show up to help them and all they do is start attacking and they don't even know what the problem is, and here is a person with no weapon, no gun, and even if he didn't act like he wanted to sit on the curb, and I just met with the police department, there's some issues with that sitting down on the curb thing. That's been challenged before, and it's something that they're reviewing about the process. They say that's the way it's done in California, but we got to look at that. The other thing is that what I don't like is that when someone has an incident and Mr. West is gone, that they said in the Bernstein's report, they made comments in his press release, made comments about some of his past. Well, the same thing with some of the police's past. If they have some bad habits and they're police who have done some wrong things and they've been reprimanded and switched to another district and they're doing the same old, then Mr. West's past had nothing to do with what happened to him in those short 10 minutes. Nothing.
So, George, people.
And then my thing is another thing. How was Nicholas Davis Chapman even able to pull him over when this man don't even have a driver's license? He's not even supposed to be driving a cop car. He was driving that vehicle. His license, registration suspended. He got all these charges on him, and he's able to be a cop to jump over somebody and say, and then the thing was, I said, well, what did they even pull my brother over for? Well, it looks like he was kind of driving too slow. And my cousin made a good point, because my cousin knows that block like the back of his hand, and he's approaching a stop sign. So did you drive speed up in a stop sign where kids are, when you see school signs? It made no sense. It made no sense whatsoever. And then another thing, Eli, he said, well, he got out the car. He said, Nicholas David Chapman said everything was going good. He got out freely and said, oh, sure, go ahead, search the car. He popped the trunk, let him search it,
exactly,
and everything was
right.
going well. And then he said, then he's sitting there on the curb, and then he said, Nicholas noticed a bulge in his sock. But one, that's a freaking lie, because I saw my brother. I was with my brother. My brother had on ankle socks. One, you couldn't even put no balls in no ankle socks. So tell that creep need to get out of town. Like I told him this morning when he was on the radio station, I told him he need to get out of town with those lies. We're going to fight this, and we're not going to stop.
George Peoples, let me bring you into the conversation here before we have to end, move on to the next guest. The Commissioner Batts is convening an independent commission of people outside the police department, outside the state's attorney's office, to make his own evaluations to give to him about the officers. I know that Anthony McCarthy, another host on WEA, is on that commission. I'm not sure who else is on the commission at the moment. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, Mark, first off, let me weigh in. I'm going to talk about that commission, but first let me weigh in on some things that my nieces and my nephews said, and also Tessa Hill Aston. First off, when State Attorney Greg Bernstein said he's going to sit down with our family and try and be transparent, he came in there with a smug attitude, an arrogant attitude, and the first thing out of his mouth was to say that he's not going to prosecute the officers, regardless of what else is going to be said. Secondly, he invited our family there, and he in turn was holding a press conference, and then he called Central District Police. Do you know that my entire family, they were going to arrest my entire family from that building? They forced us from off of the floor. That is ridiculous. We were invited down there. That's number one. That's number one, Mark. Number two is what he told the family in that meeting was entirely different from what he gave out at the press conference.
Exactly.
We specifically asked him questions there that he was unable to answer, especially one when he said that the investigation took so long because he wanted to be thorough and make sure he had everything covered.
Right.
However, he told us that he interviewed all of the officers except one. Now, how can an investigation be complete if you don't have all of the officers' statements involved? Who knows what this officer would have revealed or why he didn't speak up, and he just did not seek to get this officer's statement. Number three, I asked him about who were these two officers that stopped my nephew. Were they part of the Violent Crimes Impact Unit? And he said, yes. I said, well, the area that my nephew was stopped in is not known as a high crime area. It's not known as a drug-infested area. This Violent Impact Crime Unit doesn't even carry a traffic citation book. So why would they say that he made an illegal move and then they followed him because he was acting suspicious? How can they tell he's acting suspicious? He's inside the car unless they were following him for some length of time. And finally, I am so upset because Bernstein lied to my family point blank and said that these two officers, Nicholas David Chapman and Jorge Ruiz, were not involved in the Anthony Anderson case or the Abdul Salam case, when he, in fact, dismissed the charges against those officers, against Anthony Anderson.
Exactly.
So he looked into my family's face and totally disrespected us, totally lied to us. Now, this commission that you brought up, Mark, I think that there should be regular citizens on this committee. Now, of course, they're supposed to be professionals, but this commission, and it's supposed to be independent. And speaking of independent, that medical autopsy is not as independent as it claims to be. It's biased, and it's leaning towards police accounts.
Yep.
And that is ridiculous. And that's the same way that this commission leaned towards when they decided that the police acted reasonable and within the parameters.
Well, I first of all, let me just say that there are so many unanswered questions here. So many answer questions that we have to have answered around this case. And one of the things I'm hoping is that with Commissioner Batts's commission keeping this conversation alive, that we get to some answers. Because you've raised answers. You've all raised questions that no one has had answers to. And I think we have to probe them in a very serious way. And I want to just say this before we move on to our next series of guests, that I thank you all for being willing to come on this program to speak. I continue to really be sorry for your loss and sorry for what you're going through now. These airways were always open to you and your family to the NAACP to come on here to continue this conversation. We will not let it go until all the answers are done.
We thank you.
Mark, I want to thank you for providing the venue for this family to continue to get out the untruths that are being told, which is a conscious conspiracy that's carried on all the way from Mayor Stephanie Rollins, the Baltimore City Police Department, and the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner, because they're all conspiring. And I thank you for providing this venue for us. And as long as you keep the channel open, we will be willing to talk.
Family members George Peoples, Neil Norris, Tawanda Jones, and Tessa Hale, President of NAACP, thank the four of you so much. We'll be talking again soon. If not before the holidays, have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year as well as you can.
Thank you.
Happy holidays to all your listeners, too, as well, Mark.
Thank you. Now we're about to have a conversation with Chuma Obonemi. Chuma is one person who witnessed what happened, or at least witnessed partially what happened to Tyrone West. He's a medical student now at the University of Maryland Medical School. He lives in the immediate area of where the incident took place. And Chuma, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
How you doing, man?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm
curious, Chuma. I mean, when you first came on the program, you talked about what you saw. You heard the commotion and went up when you heard the commotion and what you witnessed.
Right.
If you could just very briefly, A, describe again what you witnessed, and B, kind of your reaction to the reports you've seen come out.
Essentially, what I saw is that the road where Tyrone West was, in my point of view, essentially beaten to death, is right behind my house. So when I was initially, I guess I was on the phone with a friend, I heard some guy yelling for help, help, help. I didn't know what was going on. We just kind of moved to the neighborhood at that time, so I didn't know what to expect. I thought, you know, maybe somebody was coming after him, chasing him. So the last time he screams help, I can kind of see his face. It looks like this tall black dude with dreads. And I see two other guys who were in these like dark blue uniforms, essentially walking towards him. And he's kind of flailing with his hands up in the air, looking terrified. So I ran over to see what was going on. At that point, when I got there, he was on the ground. There were a number of different officers who were using batons to hit him. A couple that were trying to like subdue him and like put his hands behind his back. That went on for a while, and all the while, you know, you had other police officers coming up, driving right in front of me. I think I saw a Morgan State University officer come as well. And some officers tried to continue to like subdue him, punching, kicking him, and then other officers essentially made like a little, if you could like say like a wall around what was going on, so people in the neighborhood who essentially had come out couldn't see what was going on. And then I guess after a couple minutes of that, the officers stopped. There was one who had his knee on Mr. West's back and another one on his leg, had him tied up, and then they both got off. And then we could finally see Mr. West again. He wasn't moving or anything. They flipped him over I think he had handcuffs around his arms and the back. They flipped him over, tried to give him CPR. He didn't move the whole time. And then an emergency, you know, ambulance came. He got put inside. It seemed like he was kind of foaming at the mouth because of something. I don't know what had happened. They put him inside, but they didn't have any, you know, didn't have the sirens on at all. It kind of drove away.
We're talking with Chuma Obeneme, and we'll be back to continue our conversation with him after this very brief break. That music during the interlude was Maggot Brain by Funkadelic. And we are continuing our conversation here with Chuma Obeneme, the young man, now a medical student, who witnessed the beating and death of Tyrone West. And let's get back to our conversation with Chuma Obeneme. So when you've watched this thing unfold over these last months, the news reports, the TV, things in the paper, conversations, and see this report come out now from the state's attorney's office that no one is being indicted or charged, and the police officers are being indicted and charged. I mean, do you have any reaction to that? I mean, I know you don't have any, you've got no role in it. I'm just curious if you have a reaction to that.
I mean, I think there's a lot to say. There's a lot to not say, right? I think it's another demonstration of just the way things run, I guess, and Not in, I guess, you know, more affluent communities, but communities which, you know, are predominated by people of lower socioeconomic status. Like, I don't think I could ever imagine this happening. I used to live in Baltimore County. I don't think I could ever even imagine. I don't even remember the last time I saw police officers being in that neighborhood. And then now seeing one in this neighborhood who they supposedly pulled him over because he didn't stop at a stop sign or something like that. I mean, there aren't any stoplights at the intersection where he was at. It was a stop sign. And then to see, I guess, the contrast between, I mean, it just seemed like it's kind of business as usual for people, right? Because the medical examiner's report was held for way too long. And the way it's being reported on by, I think it's, you know, Attorney General, the attorney who decided not to bring the court against any officers indicted, they made it almost seem like it was that he died, he just happened to die while he was being arrested. That the officer's actions almost had nothing to do with the fact that this man is no longer breathing, no longer living anymore. If you see the kind of things that he said in the Baltimore Sun report, which is almost, it's an absolute, I think to me, and I think the whole community, it's an affront, right? To believe that we would, given what we saw while we were there, believe such a dishonest story or an account of what happened. And I think it's just, really it's an testament to the rise of militarism of police in poor neighborhoods. Because this doesn't happen other places. It doesn't happen where, I just don't think this happens in other places, right? Like,
right.
But I think it's, it sends a message to people in these communities that they can come in, kill somebody, leave, and then they face no charges. But then also to police who, might make a mistake on the job or call in backup when it's unnecessary and kill somebody, that they're not going to face any kind of consequences for it. So it's just, it seems like it's just business as usual. I don't know.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you stood up and willing to speak on the air and speak to the police and say what you had to say and are very clear and concise about it, and that means a lot. So, Chuma, we'll be talking again, I'm sure. I wish you all the luck in medical school. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much.
We're about now to have a conversation with A. Dwight Pettit, attorney, one of Baltimore's leading attorneys, who is the attorney for the Tyrone West family, also is an author. His book is Under Color of Law, The Story of an American Family, which we'll talk to him about next month on the show. And Dwight Pettit, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Mark. It's always my pleasure to be with you and your audience.
Dwight, we obviously all know now that that no police officer will be indicted or charged. And I'm curious. You know a lot of things at the moment about seeing things we haven't seen. You can't talk about everything, I know. But what is your reaction to the fact that no one's charged? I mean, is it possible that it was not the police officer's fault that Tyrone West died in their custody?
Well, Mark, I think it's really a travesty of justice that nobody was charged. I think we see a pattern in Baltimore City of several cases like this, from the Anderson case to the Abdul Salam case, and now the West case, where people are in custody, are injured, or in this case, killed. And we find that the prosecution in Baltimore City, it aligns itself. And I don't know whether that's because of political alignment or what have you, but aligns itself with the position of the police department rather than, in my opinion, acting as an independent prosecutorial office, which should be objectively looking at the facts. When I listened to Mr. Bernstein yesterday in the meeting that he had with the West family, all he did was regurgitate and parrot the police position. He took everything that the police said and sanctioned it and repeated it. That, to me, and in many cases, distorted it to the benefit of the police department. To me, that's not an objective investigation. It's not an objective analysis. And it darn sure didn't turn out to be an objective and proper conclusion.
Well, let me ask a couple questions here. You raised the name of Abdul Salam, and there's been a lot. There have been accusations here back and forth about the officers involved and whether the officers involved in Tyrone West's death, whether some of them were also involved in Abdul Salam's death, whether they were involved in Anthony Anderson death. What do you have any facts around that at all?
Well, let me say this to you. What I did yesterday was directly raise that question with Mr. Bernstein. He categorically denied that any of the officers were one and the same. Because if you recall, I thought from the Anderson case, that those officers were suspended. Now, I can't really say, even though we all do have the Abdul Salam case, I cannot say for sure, but as I think I said on your show before, at this point in time, we have not filed suit, so we have no discovery. The only thing that we have is statements from witnesses and statements from the West family and what we've heard in the community. Now, I have heard that some of the officers, or one or more of the officers, are the same, but I cannot say that as a matter of fact, because I have no interrogatories, I have no depositions. Now, the state's attorney emphatically denied. Now, maybe he construed my question to be totally with West and Anderson, but he categorically denied, and the family followed up on that question. And he totally said, no, you've got wrong information. And none of the officers were the same in either of those two events. So we will find that out for sure, whether the state's attorney was correct or incorrect. But he said some other things in terms of the fact that he said there were no tasers involved. Well, the witnesses I talked to initially when I went into the neighborhood specifically indicated that they saw tasers being used. He said no tasers were involved because the medical report doesn't show any effects of tasers. Well, I am very, very suspect of the medical report for reasons that I think I've already told you, Mark, that that report was one of the most ambiguous and, in my opinion, evasive reports that I have ever seen in my 43 years of practice and 40 years of private practice here in Baltimore City, to lend itself to all types of misconclusions, and then there was no cause of death found, and to run out several what they might arguably say are pre-existing conditions, yet nothing was concluded to be the cause of death. It doesn't address asphyxiation. It doesn't address bruises and injuries to the body, which we will see at some point in time because we do have the preliminaries of the autopsy now. But it was just so inclusive, in my opinion, just so inconclusive and so suspect in the way it was written, almost as a total attempt to, in fact, defend the police department from any type of liability. So I don't pay much attention to, at this point in time, I don't give much credit to the state-run examiner's report. I've seen those tricks from that department before, and I totally disagree with Mr. Bernstein's recitation of the facts and analysis of the facts. And that's just a couple of examples that I've given you. It's many more things that he said yesterday that I have great problems with in terms of the credibility.
Now, I know when I interviewed Commissioner Betts a couple of times, and on tape, when I pushed him on the question of whether or not any of the officers who were involved in Tyrone West's death were also involved in Anthony Anderson's death, I did not bring up Abdul Salam. I just brought up Anthony Anderson. He kind of didn't answer the question directly two times, and the third time I just said, no, directly, can you tell us, can you definitively say that no officers were involved in both instances? And he said, no, I can't say that.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know the answer to that, really.
No. Well, I said Bernstein gave a direct answer, but I'm very, very much concerned whether that was the correct answer that he gave us. I'm not trying to say that he intentionally made a misstatement, but I would say that he might have had bad information. But that's something that is neither here nor there. We will know that at some point in time.
Right. We will know that at some point in time. Mm-hmm. So what, two other quick questions here, Dwight Pettit. One is, what are your thoughts on this independent panel that's being convened by Commissioner Betts?
Well, I think little and zero of these independent panels. Let me tell you something, Mark. First of all, the panel that came out with Anderson, that was nothing but a hand-selected, hand-picked panel to do nothing but to, in fact, undergird the position of the police department when they found, and the state's attorney, which found no responsibility whatsoever in terms of the officers. And I believe that that's the same thing that they're getting ready to try to do in terms of West. But let me even go further. You know, what is happening in the Baltimore City Police Department is so becoming so horrendous that the citizens should really begin to understand the situation that we are in as a citizenry in Baltimore City. They convened, if you recall, they convened a panel in the Talbert case. And now the Talbert case was a police officer who was shot down after the firing of over 30-some shots. I think he was shot 12 times or so, killed, and in this nightclub situation. And they convened a panel on that. And, you know, we have that case in the office, not from the Talbert family, but we have one of the female victims of the shooting because the shooting was so random that several people were involved. And that so-called commission that was convened came out and did nothing but whitewash the whole situation. We were never told why Officer Talbert was shot. We were never told that he was wearing his identification. He was known by the officers that were there. That they never explained that to the public, and that's one of their own. And so I think very, very little, and I'm very, very suspect of these so-called committees or commissions that are being set up by the police department and or the state's attorney's office to, in fact, do nothing but whitewash these atrocities that are taking place. And it, to me, it's just such an affront to the citizenry of Baltimore that these departments have become so arrogant that they believe that they can put on any type of show or say anything to the Baltimore City public, and there's no price to pay. There's no political price to pay. There's no price to pay whatsoever. And they do this with a degree of arrogance that, to me, has become not only surprising, but it has just become on another scale in terms of the administration of justice in Baltimore City.
Can you, just one more thing, Dwight, when you said earlier the state attorney's office does not act independently, what does that mean in terms of your analysis? What are you saying there?
I am saying that it seems to me from history and pattern and practices that the Baltimore City Police Department and the Baltimore City State, and I know they work together, I understand that, and I understand they have to have a certain degree of interrelationship between the two, but at this point in time, with what's happening in terms of these killings and the other shootings, which are all the things which are not becoming that public, that it seems to me that the State Attorney's Office of Baltimore City has become an interrelated department in terms of more so defending the Baltimore City Police Office rather than acting as an independent investigatory body of the Baltimore City Police Office. I think the lack of prosecutions in terms of these crimes will, in fact, have revealed that. We've seen some prosecutions now, but the prosecutions that we've seen have almost been the type of prosecutions in which Mr. Bernstein was compelled to make because the violations were so obvious, or the prosecutions were sort of in the minor side of making a misstatement or something like that. But in terms of the shootings and the killings that are reflected in the Anderson case, the West case, and others, the state attorney of Baltimore City has been very, very complacent and very much connected with defending the Baltimore City Police Department rather than investigating the Baltimore City Police Department. And for the life of me, at this point in time, I think it has become so outrageous that I'm hoping that the NAACP, with Ms. Tessa Hill and so forth, will begin to really make a demand on the Justice Department as well as the U.S. Attorney's Office that they intercede in terms of the violations of our citizens' constitutional rights.
Dwight Pettit is the Tyrone West family's attorney. Dwight Pettit, thank you so much for taking time with us today. I know you have a busy schedule, and if we don't talk before that, have a great holiday.
You too, Mark. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Now we're about to have a conversation with the Reverend Heber Brown, pastor at Pleasant Hope Baptist Church, and a leading community activist who has come on and done commentary with us on this and many other subjects similar to this and other things as well. And Reverend Heber Brown, welcome. Good to have you back with us.
Thanks so much, Mark, for having
me. So, Heber, I'd just like to hear your reaction to the fact that none of the police were indicted or charged, and what your analysis is of that, and what you think is going to come next, given that there's also this independent commission being formed by Commissioner Batts to look into the same issue.
Yeah, well, first, I just want to add my outrage to the growing chorus of voices who are decrying this decision. And not just this decision, but just how this whole situation was handled overall. I mean, it's been just deplorable how city leaders, elected officials, and others who had responsibility and have responsibility to this family have not been responsible, have not been sensitive to the needs of this family, or even not just to the needs of the family, to doing their jobs and for example, getting the autopsy report. I mean, so many things along the way of this situation have been off kilter, have been off the rails, that, of course, it raises the suspicions and helps to reinforce the perceptions of so many people that the balance and the scales of justice are not balanced, rather, and that there's a lot of backroom wheeling and dealing going on, depending on who you are. And so I'm outraged at this decision. I am disappointed in the city state's attorney. I'm disappointed even in the mayor. Her characterization of Mr. West, as it was quoted in the Baltimore Sun article recently, she spoke about the police department striking a balance between respecting human life and keeping the most violent offenders off the street. But that, you know, characterizing Mr. West as one of the most violent offenders. I mean, this was a traffic stop. I mean, Mr. West is dead by traffic stop. I mean, and so characterizing him in that way, I thought was unfair. It's a mischaracterization of him. And so I thought her words were not on target. In light of all of my outrage and disappointment, my prayers and confidence remains with the family of Mr. West. They are some of the most persistent and vocal, determined people for justice that I've seen in a while in this city. So I'm thankful for them, and I'm thankful for those who've come alongside them in support.
Yeah, that one thing, just as a quick aside here, but it is amazing how this family has grieved together at Roberta's place, but stuck together as almost a political unit in their in their solidarity to want demand answers about what happened to their loved one.
You know what, and you're so right, Mark. What I really commend this family for is that they are forcing us as a city to bear witness to their grief. They've gone to a number of meetings and hearings, a number of interviews, and even have their own kind of independent media arm going as well. As much as the city would just rather brush their story to the side, ignore their cries, they are forcing us to bear witness to their grief, and not just to their grief, but in some kind of special way, I think they're forcing us to bear witness to the grief of the hundreds of thousands of families in this city who've gone through similar situations that have not seen justice serve them either. And so I think this family is serving at least a dual purpose in making us as a city face this issue, but also humanizing the issue. Now we all will remember the name of Tyrone West just as much as we remember the name of Anthony Anderson, just as much as we remember the names of the Dawson family. We're going to remember them because this family has been diligent in humanizing their loved one and making us see him not just as a statistic or a story in the paper, but a human being who was beaten to death in this city.
Now, I'm just very curious also, Reverend Heber Brown, what you think may come next out of this. I mean, we do remember Anthony Anderson. We do remember the Dawson family. Clearly, the Tyrone West family is going to keep on pushing. They're going to be out there demonstrating every Wednesday. They're not going to stop that until things are done. There's this Commissioner Batts has said he will have an independent commission so they can have their own response to this internally inside the police department. And if that report comes out and he has to discipline officers, that'll kind of call into question what just happened about non-indictments. It may or may not do that. But it seems to me that this particular death of a man while in custody of the police could have, and I don't mean to objectify it, but could have the effect of creating a political discussion we haven't had before, a discussion about justice we haven't had before, to kind of change some things, whether or not there's complete justice for this family or not.
Yeah, I think it definitely has that potential to, I think more so to reignite a discussion and really to understand it in the way of contextual history. And so death in police custody, I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that we've not, they're not so far removed from recognition of Steve Biko, not only around the Mandela transition, but also recently. I think it was last week. It was his birthday or such.
Right. It was his birthday,
but
right.
And he is another who died in police custody. And so I think it has the potential, Mark, to reignite that discussion and give it some new energy as new voices are brought to the table. But in terms of kind of where things go from here, it's hard for me to have confidence, even though it's said it's an independent commission. It's really hard for me to have confidence at this point in the city's efforts to search out and meet out what really happened with this situation, and so I don't know. I mean, I think the same energy that the family is showing, perhaps, like you're suggesting, would find its own avenue in some type of political organization and some type of grassroots movement. That is not just focused on Mr. West, but countless others, some who've not been killed while in police custody, but some who've been beaten and abused, and just their stories are not heard. Their stories are not amplified across the city, but this could serve as a platform for those stories. And so I'm really interested and curious to see what happens, independent of what City Hall might do and independent of what the police department might do, how the people will grab hold to their own power once more to address issues like this.
We'll have to wait and see and keep talking about this, keep pushing it, and bring people to the airwaves and to your church and in the community to keep this alive so maybe we can change some things.
Definitely.
And I just want to say I misspoke. It was actually November the 14th, just 6 days ago when we're having this conversation, was the anniversary of Stephen Biko's being murdered by the South African police. That's what the answer is.
Thanks for the correction.
Yes,
yeah.
It was my correction. I said birthday. It wasn't a birthday. But. Well, Reverend Heber Brown, thank you so much once again for joining us and for being the community advocate you are.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity, Mark.
Take care. Thank you. So that's the conclusion for our conversation here today on the Mark Steiner Show, and on the heels of the report by the Baltimore State's Attorney's Office that they would not charge any of the officers in the death of Tyrone West. Let me say that we did reach out to once again to the Baltimore State's attorney. We did hear back from Mark Cheshire, who is the spokesperson for that office, saying that Greg Bernstein could not make it. I wrote Greg Bernstein a personal email to ask him to join us, and hopefully he'll do that. I'm sure he will, coming after the first of the year, to have a lengthy conversation about what happened there. We did reach out to the Fraternal Order of Police. Bob Cherry, the president of the FOP, gave our producers the numbers of their attorneys. We called them. We didn't hear back from them yet, but we will continue that, looking to have them on the air after the first of the year. And we also reached out to the Baltimore City Police, but were not able to connect in terms of setting up a time. I'm sure we'll do that as well. They did get back to our producers, but not in time for our interviews. But we will work with all of them and look forward to having them and the guests you are today and others on as we continue our look at this question of how Tyrone West died, but also the larger political and social questions around that, about what we do about that, what it symbolizes, how we address these questions in the future, what we do to change the nature of those instances in our city. Thank you all for listening.